These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs. Crack on.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull, that's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and you're welcome to the Big Tech Show podcast with me, Adrian Wetley, the tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent. And this week we're talking about smishing, and I'm delighted to have on the podcast with me Dr. Jess Barker, co-founder of Sygenta, a UK-based cybersecurity firm and author of the upcoming Confident Cybersecurity book to be published on September the 10th in the UK and in Ireland. Jess, you're very welcome to the podcast.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you so much.
I'll just start with your book. It's coming out September the 10th.
Yes.
58 case studies, according to the Advance blurb.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of case studies because, I mean, we've got a lot to pick from, unfortunately, haven't we? There have been so many incidents when it comes to cybersecurity over the last few years alone. But I do find that telling those stories and, you know, referring to what has happened really brings the subject to life. If we're talking about cyber war, for example, then it's very helpful to be able to cite cases, to say what's happened and to really explain some of the details.
I've always found as a journalist trying to eke out details in case studies, it can be kind of tricky, sensitive. Did you find that? I mean, are most of them divulged to you in kind of an anonymous way, or how did you find that part of the process?
No, so most of them are public domain anyway.
Okay.
So they're, you know, known incidents. It was just about pulling together kind of what happened. And some case studies are in much more detail than others. It can be really challenging, as you've said, when it comes to cybersecurity to get all of the details about everything that's happened. Sometimes we just don't know who might have done something or how they've done it or why they've done it. But where possible, I put in the information that's out there just to help people learn.
Mm. Well, today we're talking about smishing because here in Dublin, there was a case last week where one of our biggest banks, Bank of Ireland, did a U-turn kind of because of a talk show that the broadcaster here, RT, has called Liveline. And there was a huge campaign with people ringing in and saying that they had been the victim of this smishing, SMS phishing, fraudsters inserting themselves into legitimate text message conversations between them and their bank. And some of them fell for it and the fraudsters ended up getting some money. Now, normally the banks have a kind of a delicate position as they basically say, look, we feel sorry for you. If it's extreme, we might talk to you on a case-by-case basis. But they weren't refunding the money. They did in this case. They did a U-turn. So I just thought we'd look at the issue of SMS phishing. In layman's terms, would you have a shot at explaining it?
Sure. So SMS phishing, we'll all be familiar, I think, or most people will be familiar with email phishing. And it started out, or, you know, the classic example is a foreign prince who emails you because they want to give you a good share of their fortune. If you'll just send them a little sum of money first or send them your bank details, then they will transfer their wealth to you. So that was phishing, you know, what, 5-10 years ago, and pretty identifiable and pretty much, you know, often over email. What's happened in the last few years is we've all become far more savvy to that kind of email fish. And so phishing in general has become more sophisticated. And this means it has become harder to identify. It's become more targeted, what we call spear phishing. And the channels by which we receive phishes have broadened out. And so we're still getting email phishing, but we're also seeing more phishing over SMS, over text messages, and that's smishing. We also, of course, have voice phishing, which allegedly is what was used for the recent Twitter incident. And we see social media phishes. We see phishing over WhatsApp and other kind of message communication platforms. So any way people can communicate, essentially, we're receiving these kind of phishing messages.
Yeah, I've looked at this a little bit before. I'm absolutely not an expert in the area. But one of the things that struck me before when looking at phishing and spoofing in particular is just how easy it is to do a very basic spoof. I mean, a lot of websites set themselves up as pranking or prankster sites. I've tried a few of them. Within 5 or 10 minutes, it's like filling out an online email form. You can pretty much send an email to almost anybody else pretending to be someone else. And unless they kind of know what to look for, if they just glance at the email, and the same for a text message as well, it will look like it's from somebody. I'm not quite sure there's that consciousness out there of just how easy it is to do this.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, what we've seen with that kind of spoofing that you talk about, with this phishing, with cybercrime in general, is this idea of cybercrime as a service. So actually, you don't have to be technically skilled yourself. If you're a criminal, you can actually go to websites, potentially go to places on the dark web, and either fill out sort of forms so that this will be done for you, or hire people who will do it for you. And so unfortunately, it has made it a lot more accessible. And this is one of the reasons we've seen such a huge rise in it.
Mm. One of the things that also strikes me is that the criminals could be a lot more successful if they were just a tiny bit more literate. I mean, it never fails to amaze me how much I think they could get if they just rearranged their wording a bit better. I mean, my wife got one the other day on Saturday. I took a screenshot of it, and it's a different bank. It's AIB. I got onto the bank. They agreed it was a smishing attack, and it reads, "Your AIB online access is frozen due to deceptive actions." Deceptive, right? "To recover, visit," and then a bogus URL. "Immediate action is required with no punction." Deceptive actions. It's kind of like they're reading a 19th century novel or something, you know. So when you talk about
how, tried to use a big word.
yeah, and but we see that. I mean, because one of the telltale styles traditionally with phishing, for example, was bad grammar, bad punctuation, bad English, not like bad use of jargon, and like the nerd in me kind of thinks, guys, if you just were a little bit better with your language, you'd actually pull it off.
Don't give them tips. Don't give them advice. No, but actually, what's fascinating about that, I used to think the same. And then I learned that they would use bad grammar and bad spelling on purpose, because it was a way of them kind of narrowing down their pool of targets. So they would send out a phish or a scam, and if they would use poor grammar and poor punctuation, bad spelling, the people that responded to that were more likely to go on to be fooled in general and to become a victim.
Okay.
Whereas if they use really good language and good punctuation and make it very sophisticated, more people might respond immediately. But as the scam goes on, they will lose that conversion rate, I guess.
And they might be wasting effort at a more elevated level of the scam. I never even thought about that. Okay.
No.
That's really interesting. So there's method behind that bad language and bad grammar.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so what we see when it comes to all of this kind of scamming is such diversity in sophistication. Some of it can be very low level, and absolutely, you know, still any of us could be taken in by it if we're busy, if we're hurrying. Mm. But some of it is easily identifiable. Some of it is much more sophisticated and has been conducted with much more skill.
Mm. I mean, one of the other problems is the banks and many businesses. I don't want to zero in too much on banks here. They will often say, when they're answering questions about this, they'll say, "We will never send you out an email or a text with a live link. That's just not true. I mean, it's just not true. I mean, my own bank, Bank of Ireland, they don't often send me out something with a live link, but they occasionally do. I just checked my correspondence. There was one fairly recently about a survey they wanted me to do, and there was a live link on it. You know, and if you're somebody who's not as au fait with IT systems as you and I would pretend to be, or would say that we are, I mean, it's going to be confusing, you know?
Absolutely. It's one thing organizations really have to get right is how they communicate, because that sets a precedent for what we as consumers will see as the norm. And so if they tell us, oh, we're not going to send out a link, but then they do, we kind of become desensitized. We think, well, they have done before, so maybe they are sending me this one. But, you know, everybody can get it wrong. I've heard of cybersecurity awareness teams in organizations that, on the one hand, raise awareness, never click a link in an email. To find out more, click this link. Read more information. So it's challenging.
Yeah, and there are people, I mean, to take a bank again, it's a very large organization with usually an awful lot of people at different levels. They're hiring all the time. There's a lot of people coming in, coming out at different levels, different clerical levels. So we can be a little bit too hard on them sometimes as well. This is not like a really crack tight unit. This is a general representative body of workers who are probably doing their best.
Yeah, absolutely. And with anything like this, it's difficult because, you know, people get defrauded, and that's really challenging. We also have to recognize that the bank is being targeted. And ultimately, it is the criminals behind this that, of course, are causing it. I'm not saying that organizations can't and shouldn't do more to up their security, but to some extent, we're all victims in this.
There's one element to this that leaves me with a lot of questions. I've gone looking for answers on it. I haven't really come up with any. I'm not expecting any clear answers, but it's this issue behind the idea of smishing, and some suggestion in some of the pieces I've read that there is a vulnerability in what they call SMS gateways, these big gateways that a lot of companies, including banks, use to send out mass marketing communications. And that the way that they are architected or constructed, there have been warnings about this before, make them vulnerable in some instances to scammers interjecting themselves, sometimes maybe even into a live conversation. Is that something, do you think, in the medium term we need to be worried about?
It's something that we have to consider. It does seem from my understanding that they are a vulnerability, that it's complicated. So an SMS gateway, for anyone that doesn't know, is essentially how a large organization manages text or SMS communications with their customers. You know, they don't send them through phones, they send them through an SMS gateway, like a server, a big computer that manages it for them. So we can't just not receive those messages because they often send us important ones. Of course, the organizations need to be able to manage that kind of mass approach to sending SMS or text. But it does seem to be an issue when it comes to smishing, particularly the more sophisticated smishing where the criminal, as in the cases you've identified, will insert themselves in a conversation. So it's not coming kind of left field. There's an established conversation with an organization, and then a spoof, scam, phish message comes in.
And then to go back to this consistency issue, I just as we were talking earlier on, it did occur to me, it's not just the emails and the texts that we sometimes get from our service providers. Sometimes they'll call you up. I mean, I get calls sometimes from a service provider. It might be a bank, it might be a TV service provider, and they'll say, hello, am I talking to Adrian? Hello, am I talking to Adrian Wechter? Yes, this is Adrian. Now, before we go any further on this call, could I just have some, get you to confirm some detail? No, you can't. I mean, how do I know who you are? And if there's ever anybody looking for money from you, that's actually quite a good way of ending the conversation. Not that I'd know about that, but I would imagine. But again, this whole approach that we still haven't arrived at this, golden path where one company one big company has gotten it absolutely right yet, have we?
Authentication is really difficult. You know, if I'm speaking to you, you're speaking to me, how do we authenticate that we are who we say we are? And those phone calls really irritate me as well. I have found organizations have got better with responding. When I will always say, no, of course, I'm not going to give you my details. I'm going to call you back on a number that I know is legitimate. And I have found that generally now the response is way better than it was a few years ago, whereas now they're like, absolutely, of course, we understand. But still, it adds a layer of complexity. And again, it's that issue of not practicing sort of what you preach. Mm. On the one hand, organizations will be say, don't give out your details. Make sure you're speaking to someone who's legitimate. And then on the other hand, they'll ring you up and say, can you tell me your date of birth and your account number and
everything.
All sorts of things. Yeah. And I think it's more difficult at the moment. I've noticed that a lot of organizations, of course, with many people working from home, they may be ringing from different numbers. Mm. It may not show up as the number that you know. When you're trying to get hold of someone, it's harder to get hold of them. A lot of organizations still haven't sort of sorted out their remote telephone systems.
Mm. Yeah, I'm waiting for the day when, you know, those instant chat help support on websites. Maybe you have, but I haven't heard yet of someone interjecting themselves in there. But I'm waiting for that day. That'll be a fun one.
That's one to watch for.
Yeah. Just lastly, on the issue that sparked this conversation here in Ireland was this issue of smishing with bank customers. So the bank has said that it is actually going to reimburse the customers. Now that is kind of because there was a public outcry and there was a PR campaign. But in general, is it right? Should banks be taking responsibility for this, or no, or is it more complicated?
It is complicated, and I think banks are wrestling with this. Where does the responsibility lie? And it's not just banks. Actually, we see it also with conveyancing fraud. We've seen some terrible cases where people are buying a house and interjects themselves in sort of communications, says, oh, I'm your estate agent, I'm the realtor, and our bank details have changed, you need to send the deposit here. And so people have lost their whole life savings in those kind of instances. Mm. So
there were a few famous cases in the last few. There was one case, as far as I recall, it was a football player, it was a Premier League football player who was going, it was a Dutch league football player going from Feyenoord, I think, to... it was one of the big Italian teams, and somehow the criminals managed to get involved, get into the middle. And I think the Italians ended up paying the criminals something like 2 million quid or something like that.
I remember that case as well.
Yeah. Now, the problem with football, of course, is actually they should stick you to the faxes. You know the way on deadline day they always say, and an offer is being faxed in. Might be a little bit safer if they stick to that.
Exactly. But so where the responsibility lies, you know, who has to take the financial burden of that, I think is really difficult, because sometimes even identifying sort of responsibility is really difficult. Has the fraudster been able to compromise at the bank end? Mm. Have they inserted themselves in the middle? Is it something that the consumer did? Did they give away details? Ultimately, though, you're being scammed. Mm. So we need to get to the bottom of this, because too many people are losing too much money. And I think it's not right that the burden is just reliant on an individual.
Mm. Sometimes that burden seems to be clarified in either a subsequent court case, or maybe if an insurance company gets involved. It's when the amounts of money start to stack up that it gets a little bit clear. Just lastly, so your book Confident Cybersecurity, September the 10th, 14 chapters, 58 case studies covering tech, human and physical aspects. Is that right?
That's right. Cybersecurity is technical, of course, at its heart, but it's also about people. It's also about physical security. And so the book covers that. It talks about social engineering, this kind of phishing stuff we've been covering, covers cyber war, what organizations and individuals can do to better protect themselves. And it also talks about what cybersecurity means to all kinds of industries. So we think about banks, we think about governments, but also what about pop stars? What about YouTubers and social media influencers and footballers. Lots of examples of cybersecurity in all sorts of different areas of the world.
Okay, look, who's the publisher?
It's Kogan Page.
Kogan Page, looking forward to that. Dr. Jessica Barker, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. And that is all we have time for this week, folks. So from me, Adrian Weckler, the tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent, I'll be here same time next week. Bye-bye.